Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 111, recorded on December 8th, 2010. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iPhone, iPod, Touch, iPad, App Store, iTunes, and all that fun stuff. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me this evening is Mr. Bill Palmer from Beat Week Magazine. Hey, Bill.
Hey, I know it's been a while. I'm not sure this works. Was I supposed to be issued an actual communicator? All I got is this iPhone. It doesn't zap anything. I don't understand.
No, that's an app. You have to get the zapping. Is it, what is it, laser?
Does
it actually stun people?
Yeah, if you get the right app.
With my iPhone, I press the buttons and people just stare at me blankly. Like,
you have to jailbreak first. That's the problem.
Also, sorry, but I do have to stun your iPhone harder.
Can I just point out that Bill sounds like the Godfather?
You know, I love this because, you know, I know it's been a while, you know, since I've been on here. I'm like, you picked the perfect timing. I've had laryngitis for like 10 days, so. Couldn't have been any better time.
I'm glad to have you on here, Bill. It's always great to have you on, and everybody enjoys having everybody enjoys it when you are on the show. I get a lot of emails regarding you being on, and also Adam Christensen's here as always from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm lovely. How are you?
I'm good. How are space things?
Space things, yeah. So, I'll touch on that.
Michael went to space camp. Isn't that cute?
I went to the adult space camp.
Do they have Wi-Fi there?
Yeah, they do. Yeah. Actually, and also Jeff Gamet is here, managing editor of the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, I want to point out I have never been to space camp, so I'm a little jealous.
I didn't actually go to space camp, and I want
Then I'm not jealous anymore, poser.
But you prepare to be
you
jealous.
You didn't accidentally launch the space shuttle and then they have to figure out how to
accidentally go
bring
to space?
It back to Earth?
No.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean, I'm not allowed to talk about it. So yes, but you know, officially no, I did not. But what actually happened? So last week we didn't do a show, obviously, because I was at Kennedy Space Center and I couldn't be bothered to, you know, talk about iPhone things. So it was really cool. I saw the shuttle Discovery on the pad, and we accidentally went to space.
Sweet.
Yeah, it was good times.
That's cool.
Yeah, but I highly recommend if you are planning to go to Florida, totally, you have to check out Kennedy Space Center. And the admission to the visitors center is good for 2 days. That's kind of in the fine print. So it's good for 2 days. And so that way you can get in there and see all the stuff. We didn't see everything. We tried really hard, but, you know.
You know, that's a better deal than Stennis. I've gone to the Stennis Space Center several times. And that's a really cool place to go, especially if they're doing a shuttle engine test.
Oh, is that where is that?
That's in Mississippi.
And is that where they make the shuttle engines?
I don't think they actually make them there, but they do a lot of engine testing there.
Oh, cool.
And it's pretty cool.
Have you seen a big Saturn V rocket?
I've seen a section of a big Saturn V rocket. I haven't seen a complete rocket, though.
I saw, I would say, a complete one. It didn't have the inter portions for each stage, but it had all the stages. So it's cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah. All right. So on to the iPhone stuff.
Wait. I thought we were doing the...
This week in space.
We
should. I thought that was. You know, they actually canceled that. That sucks.
Houston, we have a podcast.
Well, we could do our own This Week in Space thing.
I keep thinking I don't
probably
know
have
enough.
To have a different name since This Week in Space was already used. So, like, Space in My Pants or something.
Space from Space.
Yeah, This Week from Space. I like that. Okay, so Apple's getting a fancy new campus, according to. Is it rumor or is it pretty confirmed? Mercury
it was in
News?
A newspaper, so it has to be.
Yeah, it was
they
in the, it
the
was
land.
In
the land is confirmed.
Yeah, so they
did buy, you know, like 150. Well, it's 100 acres, and then like a couple of years ago, they had bought 50 acres. So they've got like 150 extra acres of property.
Yeah, just a couple blocks from their current campus in Cupertino. So it's a little bit east of their current campus, and they bought part of it from HP. But the really cool thing to me, I think we all knew that Apple had planned to extend their campus for a while. But the cool thing is the designer that they're planning
to... The rumored designer,
Norman Foster.
Which, that's actually very cool. If you don't know who Norman Foster is, do a Google search on his name.
Yeah, I didn't know who he was until the story popped up, and then I started looking at it, and like, he just makes
for giant phallic skyscrapers.
Yeah. So, what do they call it? The banana or the gherkin?
The gherkin. Yeah. So the gherkin, it's like a giant glass penis building right in the middle of of London.
It's really cool.
I'm getting my wallet out.
Just check out his Wikipedia page. They have all the. A lot of the really cool buildings that he's doing. And the other thing, I did not know about Masdar City. They say that he's drawing on his experience with designing parts of Masdar City, which is a crazy city in, what is it, Abu Dhabi?
I believe you're right.
Yeah, and they're, so I didn't know about that, and it's a supposedly no cars, no roads, just foot traffic and personal Logan's Run style transportation devices, and it's going to be all solar powered and renewable energy and stuff like that. So, but everyone
will have a crystal in the palm of their hand.
Yeah, and then after whatever X years, then you have to go to the
carousel.
Yep,
it is going to be the Apple version of the Wonka factory. It's going to be awesome.
No, I think so. I think Steve is going to have a giant watchtower or something.
You know, they got to be a little careful. I mean, I know Apple has more money than it'll ever know what to do with, and I also know Apple is the exception to every rule. But historically, when companies think they're at the peak and they think the money's never going to stop coming in, they think their industry isn't going to change, it's when they start doing crazy stuff like this and they try to build a centralized, you know, power of base. And I mean, Sears was never the same after it built the Sears Tower. It ruined that company. The Empire was never the same after they tried to build the Death Star. You know, so there's lots of examples.
Boom.
You thought I was talking Star Wars. I was talking about Microsoft and their Redmond campus. But, you know, Apple should probably be just a little – I don't mind. I think their products are a fair price. I don't care if some of the money I spend goes to them building a palace for themselves. But, you know, for their own sake, they should be at least a little bit careful considering – just how screwed the economy is, and just how people don't seem, even with the economy recovering, people don't seem to want to spend money anymore, even if they have it, although they do spend it on Apple stuff. So, you know, maybe they are smarter than I am, but just be careful.
So, Michael, be sure to forward that section right over to steve@apple.com.
Yeah, already done.
I'm sure he needs that advice from me.
Yeah, from the Godfather.
He better listen.
Well, if he thinks it's actually Brando, then maybe he will listen. Oh my God, Brando came back from the dead to tell me to be careful.
I was just, you know, I talked about this a little bit on my show, and I thought it was somebody had dubbed it. I can't remember which news blog agency or whatever dubbed it, you know, kind of Apple City. You know, and it's like it's like Mac Geek's own little version of the Vatican City, like in Cupertino. It's like Apple City.
Oh, Mecca. Yeah.
We're all going to like flock there. I mean, everybody already goes to to One Infinite Loop is like the Holy Land. If you're an Apple nerd, if they do build this thing, it's just going to be like insane.
All right. How many times have you guys been to Apple's Cupertino headquarters?
Like three or four times?
Twice.
I've never been there.
And Johnny Ive was getting sushi in the cafeteria.
Oh, you saw him? Did you talk to him?
I didn't. Somebody else did. But we apparently just missed him.
See, I've only been there once, and I wasn't supposed to be there. Not like there was a court order or anything. No one was expecting me.
It had expired by then.
I did get to see we did get walked over by an employee, and I got to see the media room, the room where they have the little media events, and that'll probably be the only time
the town hall.
In my life see the inside of that room.
Have you been thrown out?
No, we didn't get thrown out.
Okay, so that's just me.
Oh, you were thrown out?
Okay, so the deal is, you know where the doors are where they have all the codes on and only employees with the badges are supposed to be able to get through?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
If you're really quick before the door closes, you can walk through.
Oh, and did you do that without realizing what you were doing? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
And I just kind of walked on through, and the next thing you know, I was walked right back out.
Yeah, excuse me, sir. Yeah. Yeah, I had a really big lens that I was taking photos of the front of the building with, and I was approached and they were like, yeah, that lens is making everybody uncomfortable. So they're really secretive.
Probably because it was in your pants.
Well, I mean,
understandable, but you know.
Yeah, of course. All right. So are we talking about the iPad now?
Sure.
According to DigiTimes, they've heard from Chinese Economic Daily News that the next iPad will have five new features, significant new features, and it will be, according to them, video phone, better mobility, USB port, and new display technology, and 3-axis gyroscopes. So translated to Apple speak.
Fake.
Well, hang on.
I misread that. I thought it said five USB ports.
Yeah. Five.
Might as well. On each, just as plausible.
One on each side and one on the back.
My MacBook doesn't even have three USB ports.
Yeah. So it will have supposedly a FaceTime video camera, of course. Better mobility, we're all interpreting as thinner and lighter, hopefully lighter. I don't know how much thinner that thing could be. I think it's thin enough.
Lighter. There was some rumors that they were figuring out a way to kind of make the glass thinner, which I would imagine would be a big chunk of weight.
Yeah, yeah. So it's definitely, it could do that. It could use a little cut down on the weight. The new display technology, I'm guessing, you know, Retina display. I think that's
no way.
No.
Well, what?
No.
What is okay. What is Retina display at that? At that size, I mean, what does that define?
That's a resolution that's higher than what Apple had on the 30-inch Cinema display, which actually, okay, so the new 27-inch Cinema display, it would be a higher resolution than that, I believe.
Are you sure? That seems ridiculous.
It has to do with pixel density,
ridiculous.
Right?
Yeah.
It's all about pixel density.
But I mean, nobody's defined what that is. I mean, Apple has said the iPhone 4 display is a Retina display, and
it's
that's
like
what, 326 pixels per inch? Is that right?
Yeah.
So is that the definition, or can Apple just say, well, no, you know, for this size screen, a Retina is 240 pixels per inch?
Well, any other company, I would say it's 326. But with Apple, they can just throw around any term they want. So and okay, because it's their word, then I think that they could do whatever.
Yeah, it's just a marketing term.
Yeah.
Whose Retina are we talking about, though? I mean, I'm legally blind without my glasses. To me, an Etch-a-Sketch is Retina display, you know?
Exactly. That's a very good point.
Is it 2020? Is it 2050? Probably safe to say that Apple will do that at whatever point they can do it. If not iPad 2, then iPad 3. You know, they want that to happen. The other question is the USB thing, you know, because that's more of a choice for them.
That is not going to be there.
I agree.
That is the dumbest. That I put that right up there with the like second dock connector on the side, so you can do landscape.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Okay.
The design that's been presented would be correct if Apple farmed the entire project out to Asus.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well. They also say there's going to be a 3-axis gyroscope, which I think is definitely going to be in there.
Likely. But
now regarding the USB, though, I think the only. Are you guys familiar with the regulations that were passed in Europe that require a USB charging port for mobile phone manufacturers?
Yeah.
Yeah, and as I recall, you can be in compliance with that if you include a little adapter with your phone.
Right. Okay, so if they have a dock to USB, which is the camera
cable, which is included.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so the cable is that adapter. The one that they already ship is that adapter.
You know, a USB port on an iPad would be a disaster because consumers have an expectation that they can plug in anything from a $29 inkjet to an external hard drive to any old USB device they buy and have it work.
Oh, yeah,
there's no way they could outfit iOS 4 or even iOS 5 with that. There's not even enough storage space to build all those drivers into the OS.
And everybody would just be irate that they couldn't plug in everything, too. Oh, it's a USB connector. Why can't I plug in this?
And it would be the grandmothers that had the biggest problem. I mean, you and I, you know, all of us, we would understand why it's a limited USB port. Don't tell it to some old lady or some old guy or whatever who just bought one and it's, you know, it's their only computer there that, you know, they think USB is plug and play for everything.
Right.
Yeah. And I'll point the other direction. I mean, look for printing what Apple has done. It's AirPrint and they're pushing AirPlay for, you know, so they're moving away from wires. They're not going to put more connectors on there. They're going to go, well, if you want to print, then get a wireless printer. If you want to play music, you're going to do it this way, you know. So we're moving away from extra connectors.
And right. That Air stuff also shows that Apple still views the iPad as being a slave to the computer. maybe that's because they also make Macs, or maybe they just think it's more simple that way. But, you know, they want your print job to kind of go through your iPad to your Mac out to your printer, you know?
Well, you know, I was talking to my grandmother yesterday about her getting an iPad, and I said, you know, you would really, it would be great if you got the 3G iPad, but, and she doesn't want to use a computer. But I said, you really need to have a computer. And I'll show you, basically, you plug in your iPad and you press this button and that's all you'll have to do. But I even think that it's necessary to have a computer for an iPad because, I mean, you have to back up your stuff because one random bit flip will, you know, say will send your iPad into recovery mode, you know? So, for what, I don't know if that, how relevant that is to the discussion, but
no, I think you're right.
Yeah.
And also, like, on my iPad, I mean, I'm not probably not the most sophisticated iPad user. I don't do a lot of documents on it or whatever, but there's nothing that's actually permanently on my iPad. Everything is synced either from my computer or from an email server. I mean, if my iPad were wiped tomorrow, I wouldn't even, you know, okay, now I got to waste an hour syncing it. I wouldn't lose anything. And I think that's most users. There's nothing on your iPad. It's a blank, you know, it's a blank device. So the idea of it becoming an independent device has got the USB. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, are you plugging a hard drive into your iPad or are you plugging it into your... I mean, I think it would just really muddy up the waters for most users if they right. started trying to make the iPad 2 or even the iPad 3 a standalone. Maybe like the iPad 6 or something. You know, in 2005, the iPad will start to replace the computer maybe where you'll see USB ports and things like that. But it's just too early. Yep. This is still too primitive a technology.
And if Apple wanted peripherals, they would have opened up the dock port by now. You know,
They made a big
deal about how they were going to make the dock port open to third-party developers. They're not even doing that. So that, I think that just further proves they're really not interested in a bunch of things being able to be connected to their iOS devices.
Well, regarding that, I was under the assumption that Apple had opened up the dock connector to whatever was approved. And I was talking to someone who works with an iPad developer the other day, and they said that that's not actually the case. What they allow is Apple-approved accessories. So it has to be a very specific device. It can't be, you know, plug it in your computer and talk to this program. It has to be a very specific device, and I didn't understand that.
Well, that's not really what they showed, though, when they made that announcement that part of, was it part of iOS 4?
iOS 3.
I don't even remember. It might have been even 3.
It was 3.
Well, iOS 3 that they were going to, you know, they had somebody come out and show like a heart rate monitor or some sort of medical device application, right? And they had a piece of hardware that was talking to the software. And we haven't seen any of that, really.
Right. Yeah,
no,
we haven't
seen that.
So, I don't know. I can you know, one other thing on the redesign of the iPad. I did get some information from a source that I think is probably pretty trustworthy that there are significant changes in the board designs. So, and by significant, I'm thinking it means, oh well, there's new spots for, you know, the camera connectors and things like that.
Well, yeah,
and I don't think it's a huge leap of faith to think that Apple would have redesigned the board for the next generation iPad. I mean, they need to move things around. They play with the designs to make them more compact, fit more batteries, or whatever it might be. So,
but yeah, so I mean, we're definitely thinking that we're going to see a FaceTime camera on the iPad, right? And even
that seems totally reasonable,
right? Yeah. I mean, we were talking about last year when we were thinking about what an iPad would be and if it would have a camera, and we were, you know, always talking about how you'd have to hold it up or it'd be shooting up your nose. Well, you know, obviously, with, as we've seen with our iPhone 4s, that's not really a big deal because, you know, you're holding it either way and you'll be able to point it correctly.
And quite frankly, all my friends enjoy seeing what's up inside my nose.
Yeah, I totally enjoy that. That's why I call you all the time.
Well, on that note, I actually do want to point out, because I'm still gonna toe this line despite how, you know, how many people want to fight me on this with the FaceTime thing. So we've got FaceTime on the desktop, right? We've got FaceTime on our iPhones. We're all tech savvy people, right? How many of you have done more than, you know, one hand, fingers, you know, counting full of FaceTime calls?
If they would open it up to 3G, I might have a different answer. I honestly can't say until we get that to that point in the future. But to me right now, they might as well call it facepalm, because it's like the only rare times I would ever – why would I use that when I have – Wi-Fi is at home when I have my computer, in a hotel where I also have my computer. You know what I mean? When I have Wi-Fi, I usually have my laptop. The only times I would want to use this is when I'm away from my computer, and those are usually the places where I don't have Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I don't even buy that argument, and I understand, because I'm going to get a ton of people to say, I use this with my family, I travel a lot, I'm a businessman. Yes, there are edge cases in certain people that this is a really killer feature, and they will use it quite often. But what I'm saying is, this is at best 5% of the population kind of feature. I just don't think the majority of people that I know really care about video chat, which is why video has never taken off as a communications, you know, platform. Despite all the sci-fi-ness and how cool we think it is technology-wise, and we can have it in the palm of our hand, I just think I think it's, you know, people make such a big deal about it, and I think it's not anything that a majority of people really want or care about. That's all.
Well, I think that Bill's point is a really good one. The 3G, the lack of 3G in it. You know, Steve Jobs did say that we would see 3G FaceTime in 2011. However, you know, if you jailbreak like I do, you can enable it.
And I'm
saying
you're wrong. You're not. You're going to text me before you're going to FaceTime call me next time you need to get a hold of me.
I FaceTime people without contacting them all the time.
You know what? That's all
I'm saying. Yeah. As a mainstream technology, people really don't, you know, generally want to communicate over a video chat yet. I just think our society's not there for whatever reason. And I'm not saying the technology's bad, or the technology's awesome. I love FaceTime. I'm not putting it down, but it amazes me how many people think that you know, once we have it everywhere, once it's on 3G, it's suddenly going to take off. And I don't buy it.
I think it will. That's my vote.
I'd love to be proven wrong.
Okay.
So you know, regardless of which of the two of you is right, it probably doesn't matter to Apple's marketing plans. Every new Apple product, or any product really, needs one marketable feature. It's a little thinner. The battery is a little longer. These aren't really marketable features. FaceTime they can advertise.
Yes.
So even if Apple thinks no one will use FaceTime on an iPad, they'll build it in, and that'll be the main iPad 2 TV ad.
It makes great demo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It sells devices. I will guarantee you there's people that walk into the Apple store and they see FaceTime and they buy it because it has FaceTime. I'm just arguing that once it's left the store, they're using that maybe, you know, a handful of times a year. That's all. It's cool that it's there. It's like Photo Booth. You know, Photo Booth makes great demo and sells a lot of Macs in the Apple retail store, and Apple does need those technologies. Absolutely.
Yes. All right. So
it's going to be on everything.
Yeah, and I like it. Yeah. I definitely like it, and I think that the 3G will open it a lot. And I have definitely, you know, once I got the iPhone 3G or iPhone 4, you know, before I got that, I was really, even with iChat on my computer, and of course I'm in front of my computer all the time. I would never use the video chat, but I don't know. It's just, it's really fun over 3G. And I think, you know, we'll have this discussion again once they open it, if they do over 3G.
And again, it's great. It's great for families who are in remote areas and seeing each other.
Or if you're a lonely person driving in a car and you want to call
and you don't care to watch the road.
And you want to call your friend because you know he's always at his computer anyway, which is what I do. I always call Ed Kirk while I'm driving in the car, and he's forced to.
Ed totally digs that.
He is forced to look at a really weird angle of my face while I'm not looking at him. I'm looking at the road, so I'm just kind of looking off into space and like talking to him. And he's looking at some kind of window on his computer, so it's fun.
And that's because you're Joe Broken, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, moving on. On the same lines of the iPad with the front-facing camera, according to DigiTimes again, and it seems like everything regarding these suppliers is coming from DigiTimes.
Largon has a very spotty track record.
True.
Just we need to point that out.
Okay,
too.
Yeah. Largon Precision, according to them, has won the contract for producing the camera lenses. They also produce VGA cameras and 5 megapixel cameras. They recently started producing 5 megapixel cameras for, I believe they produced them for the iPhone 4 as well. And they've recently outsourced the VGA cameras to another company. So people are thinking, you know, they've probably gotten the contract for that. Again, adding to the possibility of there being a camera, or at least a front-facing camera on the iPad, and very possibly a rear camera. But does that make sense?
No.
I don't think so either.
It makes no sense at all.
I think the front-facing camera is good. I don't think the rear camera makes sense.
Nope.
Okay. So let's see. More on the iPad. iPad 2 is what we're calling it. So again, according to DigiTimes, they say that they've heard from Foxconn that they have received an order for 400 to 600,000 units of the iPad 2 to be shipped by February 2011. According to them, they were initially expecting shipments to start in late January. However, Apple is reportedly working on firmware stuff still for the next generation iPad.
Okay, and so for people that are suddenly really excited that they're going to be able to go buy a new iPad in February, you're not. This is shipments to Apple, not shipments to stores.
Well, you realize that Apple doesn't keep stuff, right? I mean, they ship, when you order something from their online store, they ship it right from Shenzhen.
Right, but they have to have that that inventory that they can get to stores, and they... And so they need to build up that first wave of product.
True.
Before they actually do the rollout. So they what they'll do is build up a little stockpile, and then they'll be doing just-in-time shipping along with that when they actually get to the ship date.
So you don't think we're going to see it in February?
Not at all.
No. It'll be early April, right on schedule.
Yep, it'll be April, right on schedule. Now, John Martellaro, John and I were talking about this the other day, and what he brought up an interesting point, which is Apple can order a relatively small batch of a product, meaning a partial shipment of the first wave of iPads, up to 600,000 units. And if there's a problem, it can be fixed for the next wave before any product has ever shipped.
Ah, yeah, so maybe they're doing a production run, a
test
run.
So, yeah, so they ramp up and do allotments of product, and then by the time they hit their launch date, they've built up the stockpile that they need for launch day.
Right.
Keep in mind, though, that it's not going to be like last time where they announce it and then 2 months later it ships. Wherever they do announce it, it'll be in stores within a couple of weeks because it's the second generation. You know, they can't do that build-up again because the minute they announce the iPad 2, iPad 1 sales go off a cliff. So if it is announced in February, it's going to ship in February.
Yeah, that's what I think.
And see, and I think it's going to be announced in March, in the second half of March.
And then ship in early April.
Right.
Yeah, that would make sense. Yep. Okay.
Has Apple ever deviated from its 12-month pattern for iOS products? I mean, has that ever happened in the history of the...
Not by a lot.
Not yet.
But basically, it's like a month worth of leeway for the iPhone.
Yeah, and iPods have been on a very predictable schedule for quite a while now, too.
Which is very nice of Apple.
Well, it makes sense. Also, because if you have this cycle of product releases and you've timed them properly, you also now have a cycle where you're keeping a steady or relatively steady income into the company. Unlike the old days when Apple would have low sales and then they'd have the big boost at school time and then a drop off and then they have their boost for holiday drop off and they didn't have that steady constant flow of cash coming in. Mm-hmm. But what they've done with their product cycles now is they've set it up so now we have the iPad in the spring, we have the iPhone late spring, early summer, and then in fall we have the iPod line. And that's not even taking into account what they do with the Macintosh products. So they've done a good job of kind of spreading it out so they have new product bursts throughout the entire year.
I call it the row row boat your boat product progression. You know, each one starts 3 months later than the next, so it allows each sort of, you know, group of developers to kind of jump in at their time on each project. Someone like Jonathan Ive, who's involved in all of them, or the Jonathan Ives of the company, you know, that they can kind of throughout the course of the year jump from project to project, because no project at Apple is ever in the same stage of development at the same time.
Sure. That makes sense. All right. So moving on to the AirPlay stuff. I updated my iPad finally to iOS 4.2. because I wanted the AirPlay stuff. And of course, as you guys pointed out to me last week, it does not work with everything.
It doesn't work with anything.
It doesn't. Okay, so what are the
so
apps?
It's like AirPrint.
They called it Air because Air is for vaporware.
Yeah, exactly. So what
it actually works, it works pretty good with my Apple TV and Apple purchased content.
So what applications does it stream video from? Is it the video app?
YouTube. And the video app.
YouTube and the video app, and that's it.
That's it.
And then the rest just do audio.
Yes.
So not even the Netflix application.
No.
Okay. See, that's lame. And
didn't I say that last time?
You did. I just didn't believe you.
I'm pretty sure you said it's lame, verbatim.
You probably said the exact same thing. Okay, so according to someone who emailed Steve Jobs saying, hey, you know, I love everything about Apple, blah, blah, blah. What's with AirPlay sucking? You know, are we going to get it fixed at any time? And Steve replied, yep, those hope to add these features to AirPlay in 2011. So anytime next year. So I'm guessing even like next December?
Yeah.
That would still be 2011.
A year from now.
Exactly.
Did you say which calendar? I mean, there's BC, there's AD, something comes after that.
True, yeah. It may be.
It's interesting, though, because there was a lot of speculation that there'd be an iOS 4.3 in mid-December and that it would have, you know, more advanced AirPlay, AirPrint features. For him to say 2011, if he spoke correctly, that means that we're kind of, you know, if there is an iOS 4.3, it's going to have nothing to do with AirPlay, you know, if it comes out in December. So it kind of stirs the pot a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it's more frustrating because you see, you know, that the jailbreakers and the hackers get in there and they're like, they've got it activated in, you know, a couple days. So it's not like it's not feasible technology or it can't be done. It's just, it's not available for whatever reason. And I'm sure Apple has their reasons.
And then Apple just hire these jailbreaker people. It would solve two problems.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting how it works. So I haven't played with it too much because I just got my iPad jailbroken last night. And it's still a tethered jailbreak, which means you can't boot up with all of your jailbreaky things operational. It just, if you don't boot with a computer hooked up, then it just acts as an unjailbroken device.
Wait, is that? I never quite understood that. So that's boot. You have to boot it up tethered every time to have the jailbreak active, or only to restore?
To have the jailbreak active every time you reboot, you must have start your iPad or iPhone or whatever in DFU mode, which requires some, you know, button pressing. And
okay,
then
but I never reboot my iPad. Like right. When I just hit the sleep wake button, that's not a reboot. That's
correct.
I operate my iPad like that.
Yeah, and that's the only reason I decided to jailbreak the iPad. I wouldn't do that with my iPhone because I reboot my iPhone all the time. But yeah, you have to have it. You have to boot up with the aid of Red Snow or whatever.
That's not a big deal.
Yeah.
Not a huge deal.
Right. So. Where were we? Okay.
The jailbreak.
The video.
The video.
So I tried playing some video from, let me think, TED. There's the TED application. And I was playing some video on it, and I thought, okay, cool. I can exit out, right? And, you know, on my iPad, that's how it normally works, correct? You can start playing a video on your iPad and send it to your Apple TV, and then you can do other stuff on your iPad while that happens, correct?
Right.
Okay.
Oh, does it work in the background? I haven't even tried that.
I believe so. I'm pretty sure it does. But like by default, if you're using the video or YouTube application. So I tried doing that because I heard that did not work. And so this TED stuff is streaming over the internet. And I sent it to the iPad or to the Apple TV, and it started playing, and I exited from the app, and it continued playing, and it seemed to be buffering at a different rate than my iPad was. And so I actually killed Wi-Fi on my iPad as it was streaming, and it still had not, the buffering bar had not completed, and it continued buffering and playing. So it seems like, and I'm not sure if this is a jailbreak or if it's just the way Apple has it set up, but if it's content that's being streamed, I'm guessing with YouTube, I haven't tried it with YouTube yet, but it seems like the Apple TV independently brings that video down and just syncs the playback head and, play pause and stuff. Which would be cool. I think that's a good way to do it.
You think it's just grabbing the stream over its own internet connection as opposed to actually pulling it from the device?
Correct.
That's interesting.
Well, this was sort of my debate too with it, or my thing about it with the current apps is, you know, I have an Apple TV, I have my Macs sitting at my house, and so if the only content I can play is the stuff that's in my video app, well, that's already on my Mac, which my Apple TV already has access to without an iPad or iPhone or anything like that.
Same thing. So then why bother?
There's a YouTube app already on the Apple TV. Yeah. So it's like I can just grab that content directly on the device. Why do I need to shoot it from my Apple, from my iPad?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
The difference being if someone came over, you know, a friend came over and he had something else on his iPad, we could, you know, watch it on the TV. Which that's kind of cool. But it does, Apple needs to open it up. It's definitely a, you know, a first gen kind of implementation of both the AirPlay and AirPrint technologies.
Guessing that it's they just had to push. There was a push for them to release that version of the operating system, and just it wasn't feature complete. It wasn't completely. You know, all the kinks weren't worked out of it. So it's very possible that in with the YouTube, that's how they had it set up. Anyway,
I don't know if you've had I call it sort of the bouncing problem when trying to set up AirPlay. So I will queue up a video and press the button to send it over the Apple TV, and it'll kind of bounce over there and kind of start. And then I've had a few times where it'll just jump back, and you have to kind of ping pong a couple times, and then finally it kind of
it doesn't stick.
It starts playing. Yeah, like it doesn't stick. And I don't know if it's a connection issue. I mean, it could be the problem with doing anything wireless is you've got so many factors.
Sure.
Like, you know, I have my Netflix in my living room, which is in a big room adjacent to my kitchen. And if anybody turns on the microwave, guess what? Netflix stops streaming.
You need to get on that 5 gigahertz.
That's just Wi-Fi interference.
Yeah.
Well, it's because it's through a a Wii, which I think is 802.11g.
I believe you're right.
Yep.
So, yeah, I need to get another Apple TV and put that in my.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to try playing some video that's local to my iPad and experiment and see how it does that.
But the point is that I'm kind of with you on, you know, Apple probably has a lot of kinks to work out. I mean, doing video and syncing audio, over wireless, even when you have 802.11n, and in a lot of cases, people don't even have N, or they have mixed where it's getting, the data rates are getting pulled down. There's just, Wi-Fi is getting tricky because we have so many devices and so much interference and from neighbors, and there's just so many different factors playing into it that, you know, it's really tough to do.
Sure.
The fact that it works at all is amazing.
Right. And, you know, there are other elements to AirPlay seeming like it isn't finished yet. I think John Gruber pointed out that you can't AirPlay video that you've recorded on your iPhone, which is crazy because you'd think, okay, I'm going to go out, I'm going to record something from, you know, the event that I just went to today, and you always want to show somebody that, but it'd be much better if you could show it on your TV, and especially if you didn't have to sync to your computer first and then play it over there. So, but you can't do that right now.
Did I rant last time about the HDCP bug?
Yeah, you did.
Yes, you did. Okay, and rightly so.
Okay, cool. Then we don't need to have that conversation.
Yeah.
Again.
Yep.
And if you don't know what Adam's talking about, go listen to the last episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it's most of the episode.
Well, it's annoying.
No, it is. I'm not. I don't blame you.
I did it a lot on the behalf of many of my listeners who contacted me to say they suffered the same sort of fate with their own personal videos and it being blocked by copy protection. And it's sort of like,
right.
It's just crazy. That's craziness.
All right. We have a lot more to talk about. Surprisingly, we have tons of stuff to talk about. But before we talk about any more, I have to let you know about our sponsor, which is GoToAssist Express from Citrix. And if you don't know what GoToAssist Express is, I'm surprised, first of all. But secondly, I'll let you know what it is. It allows you to remotely access and assist someone with their computer. So you hop on your computer. You know, if someone calls you grandma or, you know, a client or someone you're trying to help out, you know, within your company, what have you, it's great for enterprise and stuff like that. So, you know, someone calls you up, says, hey, I'm having trouble with my computer. Can you help me? Sure. All you have to do is, and then you open up the application on your computer. You don't have to do anything. You just open the app. I love that. Gives you the URL. You tell them the URL. It also gives you a support PIN. You tell them that as well. They go to the URL, type in the PIN, and 30 seconds later, it's set up on their computer. They don't have to do anything except for those two steps and maybe hit OK, I think. And then you can see their computer. You can interact with it. You can, you know, mouse, keyboard, of course. They can see exactly what you're doing, so you know that, well, they know that you're not doing any funny business. You can see all the applications that are installed, everything that's running in the background, and all of the hardware of their computer. So it's very useful. You can troubleshoot very easy. As long as they have internet, boom, you can figure something out. It supports up to 8 sessions at once. So it's wonderful for professionals. If you're in a large company where you have to help people out with, you know, either within your company or outside, maybe you have to support some customers or something like that. Or maybe you have a support business where you occasionally have to drive out to someone's house. Maybe, you know, in the middle of the winter, you probably don't want to do that. So you should maybe check out GoToAssist Express because it's very easy. You don't have to leave the house. And you can get a free 30-day trial with a special code, GoToAssist.com/Allie. Go there, sign up. You have to use your credit card, but don't worry. They'll actually alert you before your trial's up, so you don't have to worry about them sneaking up on the next month or anything like that. So it's I would say it's a risk-free trial. And, you know, once you try it out and see how awesome it is, you're going to want to stick with it. So check it out. Go to assist.com/Allie for a free 30-day trial. And we thank Citrix for their support of the We Have Communicators podcast. Go to assist.com/Allie. And with that, should we talk about how Apple is, I think they just barely, according to a research poll, I guess, from Nielsen, they say that users they polled, 27.9% are using iPhone and 27.4% are using RIM. So according to this poll, Apple's beating RIM.
In which market?
In the smartphone OS market share. So of those who, you know, between all the smartphones, Apple is right. Just slightly beating RIM. And they're beating Android OS by 5%.
This is U.S. market share.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. Yep, U.S. smartphone users, correct. So very cool, Apple. Of course, Android's going to totally beat them out in like 2
okay,
months.
Okay, so just to make sure I've got it right, they're lumping together all Android phone sales against all iOS device sales?
No, not sales. This is a survey of users.
Installed base.
Installed base, correct.
Okay.
You know, it's funny, though, because here, I mean, yesterday, you know, today, according to this, Apple has bumped off RIM. And, of course, yesterday, Google admitted that Android is over when they – did you guys catch that when Google came out and said that at this point Android is – what did they say? Was a tech enthusiast platform?
No,
I've never seen a company say something so negative about its own products. They got up – they're now trying to desperately ratchet down Android expectations. And it's got to be because they expect a Verizon iPhone, when that happens, or Sprint iPhone or whatever it is, to just destroy Android market share. Otherwise, they wouldn't have said something so negative about themselves.
See, I think they did that because they really want to start pushing Chrome OS as a platform.
So what did Apple or Google say? They said that it's for tech enthusiasts.
And then it's an early adopter platform. They said that about Android.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny. Everybody's kind of got a different take on that, because I hear that and I'm kind of thinking they're gearing up because they're going to start closing the platform to make it more attractive for...
Well, that's what I wanted. It sounds like a company who, even though despite doing very well, fully expects to get its ass kicked around the block very soon unless they change something. I mean, I did have that sense. My thought was, okay, are they now going to shut down this hobbyist nonsense and try to turn Android into an actual commercial platform? Yes. Or are they going to completely retreat? Are they saying, this is a hobbyist OS, these are the only people we're going to have once the iPhone's on all platforms? I was just stunned by the comments.
They're going to go more closed and more referenced so they can control it better so that they can better develop for it. I mean, it's got to be a nightmare for them with all this different hardware and stuff like that. And I can only imagine that they're looking at this going, well, we've got great, you know, we've got great pickup in this hobbyist market, but man, we need to break into this mainstream market that Apple's, you know, really dominating in. And the only way to do that is my mom doesn't want to have to worry about her device, you know, and whether it's going to work and what the hardware is and all this stuff, you know, and the features and it's a nightmare. I can only imagine.
I don't see it getting better for Google for a long time, because they've created a situation that fosters fragmentation in a very big way. I mean, when you go and buy an Android phone, unless you know what you're doing, if you're that target or that market that Google was talking about, the really tech people, you don't even know what version of Android you have.
Right. And if you do, all you know is that you have, you know, some kind of pastry.
I saw some other survey that said a lot of people just don't even know they have Android. They have a Samsung or they have an HTC or they have they don't know. They know the hardware.
That's a good point. Yeah, people don't even know they're buying Android hardware. And so they don't even realize when Google is rolling out of these updates that they're not getting them. Because the carriers aren't pushing the updates on to the consumers.
Yeah,
I guess it's better outside of the United States, though.
Yeah, it causes a problem on the developer side, right? Because then they've got this weird software situation going on, where you have these devices run this and these devices run that and these don't, and then the consumer doesn't know one way or the other, right? So there's just general confusion about, you know, what apps can run and what apps can't run, and you know, I've got this hardware, that hardware. Consumers don't want to deal with that, right?
Well, I've said all along, and, you know, I mean, future history will prove whether I'm right or not, but I've said from day one, I've said that outside of tech enthusiasts, the only reason an Android sale would ever happen under any circumstances is someone wanted an iPhone or they saw an ad for an iPhone and the iPhone just doesn't exist for their carrier. To me, it underscores that this is the biggest mistake in Apple history, at least from the second Jobs era of the AT&T exclusivity. I mean, we'll find out, but God, how bad can you screw up that this disjointed piece of crap that Google made when it was sitting on the toilet is rivaling the iPhone OS, and the only explanation is AT&T exclusivity.
Yeah, in the States. We have to remember that's you know, US-centric, because outside the States, you know, Apple's proving that having multiple carriers is, you know, that's a huge boon for their business.
Yeah. You know, I think that for the most part, you guys are right. You know, there are some cases where there is someone who actually has like AT&T service and they decide they want to get an Android phone. But it does seem to me that, you know, a lot of the people I know who do have Android phones simply have Android phones because they don't want AT&T, but they want something that's like the iPhone.
Yep. Yeah, most of the people I know, the conversation usually goes like this. Oh, you're a Mac Apple guy. Yeah, I really wanted an iPhone, but I really need to be on Verizon. So I got this Android, or I got this, you know.
Oh, I hear that all the time.
Phone or whatever.
Yeah, I hear that.
Or you hear people say, "Well, I know it's not an iPhone, but," and then they show you their Palm Pre or whatever Android, whatever thing it is that they bought. It's not an iPhone, but look, it's a lot like it, and I could get it on my carrier.
Right, right. Now, to be honest, the Android is wonderful because it you can do so many things with it. But at the same time, I don't remember who said it, but there are so many different ways of doing the same thing,
right?
That makes it, it makes it so confusing. You know, I am a technical person, and using an Android phone is confusing. And I sat down with a friend's Android phone for 20 minutes, and I was just kind of poking around, and I kept asking questions. You know, it's very interesting. It's cool because you can do so many things, but again, it's a little bit confusing. And, you know, adding on the whole, the fact that the operating systems are not in sync, it makes it hard for developers. It makes it tough on consumers because they actually have to know this stuff. And it's just, yeah.
Did you hear, Mossberg ask, I forget the head guy doing the Android stuff about the crapware?
No.
The bundled crapware.
Did he say the future is long? Oh wait,
he tried to pawn it off like a feature.
Yeah, he said that that's a feature.
Now, what did they say?
So, you know, because it's an open OS, you have each, and this has been always one of my problems with Android, is that it's not only what you're talking about, Michael, because you're asking your friend who has one phone, say it's an HTC Android phone or whatever. That's going to operate one way on Android that's completely different from probably the Samsung phone that he might get in his next upgrade, right? So suddenly he's having to relearn, even though it's the same OS, right? It's probably a newer version on the newer phone, and it's probably slightly different. And plus, it's tweaked and comes with a bunch of bundled apps that you know, Samsung felt that you really needed or thought you needed. And they're pre-installed and they're put on there. It's what Windows did. You know, you would get a Dell and it would have all this Dell stuff. And one of my big pet peeves of Windows is I remember, you know, Windows has a perfectly capable built-in way of managing Wi-Fi and connecting to Wi-Fi and stuff like that. I was on some IBM computer and the two were fighting. You know, IBM had pre-installed their own Wi-Fi configuration tool set or whatever. And that was competing because I was trying to set it up in the Windows, you know, network settings, and the two were conflicting. And it's that stuff. You know, they install apps, so Android might have a built-in feature for doing something, but Samsung installs some application that does the same thing, right? And you can't uninstall that app, or you can't get rid of it. I guess I don't know, something like that. Generally what crapware is.
It's funny you bring up the Mac Windows thing, because I've been thinking that, you know, I mean, just me selfishly, I want the iPhone to win. I don't want Android to win. You know, I try to be impartial and I can't, but I look at it and say, oh crud, you know, is this gonna be Mac Windows all over again? But then I think, you know, the reason why Windows won, I think, is not because Apple screwed up, but because, you know, when Microsoft came out with Windows in 85 or whatever it was, by the time Apple went to have its response, Steve Jobs had been fired. That Pepsi clown was running the company. They had no idea how to respond. This will be fascinating to watch Steve Jobs get his second chance to prevent history repeating itself, with Android being the new Windows and iOS being the new Mac. You know, can Steve get it together and actually, like, figure out how to keep this sort of Android Windows jalopy crap from taking over?
Right.
You know, or is he going to lose again? It's it'd make for good movie making, I think.
Yeah, well, keep in mind.
Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Keep in mind, this is different from the whole Mac Windows fight back in the 80s and 90s, because we're not in a situation anymore where there can only be one. It's not the Highlander world anymore. It's okay to have multiple dominant mobile phone OSs now. And so I think we'll see iOS, we'll see Android, and then after that, who knows? So Windows will probably have a good market chunk just because they're so damn big. And
they're getting some. I'm hearing some good things about the Windows Phone 7 stuff.
You know, to be fair, I have heard some good things about Windows Phone 7 also.
Yeah,
I'm okay with that, as long as everyone can continue to compete and make better products, then ultimately we all will win.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they start doing crappy things, like a lot of the kind of shady sort of tactics Microsoft used when they were really pushing to make sure that Windows was the only operating system, that Internet Explorer was the only browser. I mean, if companies try and pull that kind of stuff, then we'll have a problem.
Yeah.
It's interesting that even Google, with obviously pushing Android, still brings out things like, I mean, I don't want to jump ahead to the ebook thing yet, but you know, they brought that out for iPhone. You know, I don't know if that's Google just realizes they have to be multi-platform. It's like Kindle having the iPhone app, even though they'd rather you buy a Kindle. You know, it's almost like these companies have realized that that either or stuff doesn't really work for anybody, because you might win, but you'll probably be the loser on that end. So it does seem like they're all hedging their bets much more carefully this time around.
Yeah, well, and with products like the Kindle, where Amazon really makes some money is on selling books. So why not spread it out everywhere? And hey, we have this cool hardware thing that will help sell us books too.
Yep.
Yep. We talked. I think we talked a little bit about this, Jeff. Right? Is that the Amazon? I think Amazon's doing the right thing because they're doing the Netflix model. Right? They're gonna say, look, we're gonna just sell ebooks, and we're going to sell them everywhere, and we're going to put our software on as many platforms and as many places as we possibly can, because at the end of the day, we're a book selling company. You know, we sell books, ebooks, physical books, whatever it is. That's what we want to sell. And yeah, we have brand loyalty, and some people really want that cheap thing, and they want a good brand behind it, and they just want to read ebooks, and it's e-ink, and here's a Kindle. But I don't think they make any money on the Kindle. I think it's more a vehicle, like Apple sells, you know, iPods in a lot of ways to, or I guess the opposite of Apple. You know, Apple has iTunes to sell iPods. Amazon has a Kindle for those people who want it so that they can push and sell more ebooks.
Sure.
Right.
And that's a perfectly fine business model.
Yeah. I think it's the right one. I question when these companies kind of fragment and start to get in the hardware business. And I think, you know, with Google, with Android, I think that's smart. You know, they're a software company, so they're going to stay in that software space, hopefully. Although, you know, you keep getting these inklings that they're going to build these reference platforms for Android. And, you know, a lot of people want to see them get into hardware. But if they're smart, they don't, right? They figure out how to make their software run better, and maybe they do close it up a little bit more to get rid of some of this fragmentation and take some of the user experience, you know, issues away, things that people don't want. I've been hearing really interesting things about Android on tablets. You know, we're starting to see some of the Android tablets come out, and the biggest thing I'm hearing from a lot of people who get them is, yeah, it's really great, but you know what? It's really just Android Phone OS scaled up on a 7-inch screen. And that doesn't work so well. That's usually how the conversation ends. It's like Apple really got it right with the iPad, because they went, you know, we're not just going to scale up the OS on the iPad. Developers are going to have to rebuild their apps and rethink their apps for this platform and for this screen size. But they made it easy, and they, you know, gave options of you can do separate apps or you can have the universal apps. And I think Apple did really well on the developer side with that. And I think it's really shown in terms of the quality of the apps. And so what I'm hearing with the new tablets, these 7-inch tablets, even though a lot of people are excited about them, they're going, you know what, the OS is really holding it back. You know, the hardware is cool. It's got a lot of extra features. It's got cameras, and it's got USB ports, and it's got all those things that the iPad doesn't have that we want. But guess what? The OS and the apps are making it fall flat. So Apple, you know, I think they're going to have that edge because they control both sides of that equation.
I still see the Android, no matter how well it's done, I see it as having all the commercial viability of Linux. And imagine if over the past decade, for some reason, 3/4 of Americans could not buy a Mac or a PC. You had to use it only with some internet company that everybody hated or something. People would buy Linux boxes because it's the only computer they could get their hands on, you know. Mm-hmm. And to me, that I still don't see, even though Google obviously is a much more powerful company than the anarchist medieval people, whoever it was that was, you know, powering Linux, I still see it ultimately, I don't see Android having much bigger market share than Linux if the iPhone is expanded to every carrier, you know, eventually. But I could be wrong.
All right. So do we want to move on to the Google eBook Store?
Sure.
Sure. Okay. So
sure.
So Google announced their eBook Store, and I haven't played around with it too much. Jeff, I get the impression that you did, though.
Well, I poked around with it a little bit, and I didn't see it as something revolutionary in the ebook market, but Google's a big company, so they might be able to have a winning business model on their hands just because of their size.
So what's the strategy though with the, okay, so it's an online service, right? You can go to the website books.google.com/ebooks. You can search for
your books. They have like over 3 million titles. already. And it works a lot like if you go to the Amazon website to buy Kindle books.
Right.
And so the way that the Google bookstore is set up, it's designed like their other services to be more like a cloud service thing. So you have your books, they're all stored on a cloud system, and then you can access them when you want to from whatever device you want to use. That could be a web browser, that could be a dedicated ebook reader application that supports the Google format. Eventually, that will probably be ebook reader devices that are specific for their service. They've announced support for iOS. They are going to support the Nook and Sony ebook readers. Kindle is not on the list, though.
Interesting. So the idea
well,
is
not really. It's not that big of a surprise because
well, yeah.
And not so much from the competition standpoint, but from the file format standpoint, because I think that the way the Kindle ebook format is set up, it's just simply not compatible with Amazon's Kindle, and other companies were willing to add in support to their devices. And keep in mind, the Nook is actually... oh crap! Is it Linux or Android? I think the Nook is an Android device, so that makes it even easier to add in support.
Sure. So, do they have more books than the iBook Store?
Oh yeah, if they have 3 million, they have way more.
Wait, was it 3 million or 300,000?
3 million. I believe it's 3 million.
3 million. Wow. Okay.
And prices are in line with what Apple has and what Amazon has.
Well, I searched for 1984, and they don't have that either.
I think I wonder how much. I'd be curious to know how much of Google's 3 million is Project Gutenberg stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, see, there's a big problem with the whole Google ebook thing because the stuff that they have that's scanned, a lot of it looks like absolute crap. And I mean, it looks like someone faxed you a copy of a copy from someone's mimeograph machine. I mean, some of it looks just horrendous.
Google do something in a half-assed way? Are you kidding me?
I know, it's shocking, isn't it?
I just love how they've managed to copy. Yeah, I mean, Apple copied the idea from the Kindle. I mean, Apple ebooks aren't original Apple, but yeah, I'd like to see Apple make one move that Google doesn't copy. I mean, what are they going to do next? Like iLife 11.5, Google will come out like Ping number 2 or something. Is there anything Apple should do something really stupid just so Google will copy it and waste money on it?
Well, actually, Apple has done one thing that Google hasn't tried to copy yet, which is cover up the fact that your CEO has cancer and is getting his liver replaced.
Right.
So,
yeah,
you know
what? If you grabbed 100 people off the street, 99 of them couldn't tell you the name of Google's CEO anyway.
That's true. And at this point,
that?
I bet most of them wouldn't even have a clue that Steve Jobs ever had cancer or has someone else's liver now.
You know, I'll tell you something, and I don't want to say who, but I sat down with a musician once a couple years ago, and, you know, we were just talking before the interview, and we both had our iPhones out, and she said, this was before anything came out officially, she said, does Steve Jobs have cancer? Is he dying? Because I really hope not. And it was an isolated thing, but it just caught me off so guard. Someone so far removed from any stuff that people like us talk about. And you know, the first subject of the iPhone, this is before Apple even announced anything, you know. So I think there may be a little more of that out there than we think. Just from, you know, it's one of those topics because Steve Jobs is the closest thing to a rock star celebrity there is in the tech industry. You know, him and Gates, and I mean, Gates is retired, so.
That's interesting.
You guys don't know whether I'm done talking or my voice just crapped out, do you?
No, I just jump in wherever I feel like anyhow.
Yeah.
So it's all good.
It is
see,
all good.
I was done talking too. So
oh, okay.
Maybe
yeah.
My voice crapped out.
Ebooks.
Yeah.
I don't know. Ebooks is another one of those weird technologies that, you know, I think some people like and some people don't. I think it's interesting to see so many people jumping in. That was the only thing I noticed about Google. It's like, why do you want to get into a business that really hasn't... I guess it's good to get in early, right?
But don't people want to cover their bases? Like, remember when Microsoft announced the Zune, a whole ton of iPod accessory makers, case makers, speaker makers, they brought out Zune accessories right away, even right. when it was kind of clear from the beginning that Zune was going to flop. So I think a lot of the mindset is, let's cover our bases. You know, the worst we do is, better to be on the train that isn't moving than to have, missed the train that becomes a rocket ship.
Well, yeah, and I look what happened when Apple brought out iTunes, and then suddenly we had how many different music stores. There was Napster and Realhead theirs and iTunes and Zune Marketplace, and I don't know how many of those are really left, or could you really point to and say are successful. And I think we're left with iTunes and probably Amazon, right?
Yep.
Maybe Zune Marketplace. I don't live in that world too much, so I don't really know, but.
I got a cousin who uses a Zune, and he just got rid of it because he didn't want to buy an iPod, but he said it was because there just wasn't enough support for it anymore. He got an iPod Classic because I guess he didn't want to, he's like, oh, only hipsters use an iPod Touch. So, but, so those are the types who buy a Zune to begin with, and I hope he's not listening to this. But, again, that's one anecdotal example just picked out of thin air. But, if that's accurate, then, the air may be out of the Zune balloon by now.
The Zune balloon.
I just realized that right when I said it.
That's awesome.
More of these online stores, and I guess e-books and sort of video TV stuff is the hot stuff to be in right now, if you're looking for media. Mm-hmm. So just seems like Google piling on and saying, here we are too. Here's our thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Okay, so moving on, we have two more things here. The first regarding MobileMe. Am I really? I think my mic is too low. There we go. That's better. All right. So according to another guy who emailed Steve Jobs, he said, I love Apple. I love you, et cetera, et cetera. But MobileMe sucks because of all the syncing issues. I'm paraphrasing.
But do you realize that seems to be the trend of email that gets sent to Steve Jobs is exactly what you're defining is, oh, I love Apple. I think you're really great. But here's what sucks.
Yeah, and then you finish up with something, P.S. I love you, or something like that. I think we can make one of those generators.
It's not just kissing up to them. You want them to know that you actually use the products. Here, I'm giving you lots of my money. True. I'm not rejecting you as a company. I like your stuff. Here's the one thing that's screwed up. As opposed to saying, I hate everything about your company. Macs suck. iPhones suck. They all suck. And oh, by the way, MobileMe is no good anymore. Please fix it.
Yeah, maybe that's the key to every Steve Jobs email, because I've sent him some emails, but I've neglected the fanboy extra frosting for that cake.
Have you tried tweeting Phil Schiller?
No.
He's on Twitter and it's verified, right?
What? He's on? I did not know that.
Yeah. I don't know if it's verified. I really can't figure out if it's him. It's P. Schiller.
I bet it would be
it's,
P.
It's Phil Schiller.
Okay, hang
it,
on.
It has to be because
he
it's
doesn't
a verified
tweet
account.
Too much, I don't think.
Verified account, Phil Schiller. And it has a guy with a dolphin?
Isn't that the anti-child abuse icon?
Yeah, he's doing the whole anti-child abuse thing with the icon. And,
lame.
So here's my public service announcement. It's great that people are trying to raise awareness about child abuse by changing their icons, but changing your icon isn't nearly as effective as actually going out and stopping someone from beating a child, which is exactly what I will do if I see someone beating a child.
I also think it's just that icon really just promotes dolphin abuse.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Okay, putting spectacles
on it. It's pale white. It's obviously not been fed. It's terrible.
It is not happy about those glasses it's wearing.
Yeah, but you know,
glasses on a dolphin.
Dolphin is the best taste in tuna.
Mm. Is that like retina display for dolphins? What are those glasses?
Yeah, he may be testing something. But anyway, back to the MobileMe stuff. So the email was about the suckiness with regards to unpredictable syncing and weird, duplicates and all that weird stuff, which
I hear about this all the time and I've never suffered this.
Oh, I'm getting it constantly. I had to mess with it today. So But anyway, so Steve says, yes, it will get a lot better in 2011. So, hopefully it does. I don't think he's going to say something and then not deliver. I'm guessing Steve Jobs uses an iPhone.
You can print to pretty much any printer you own with AirPrint.
I think that Steve Jobs wants to be able to print to any printer. I think he would enjoy doing that. You know, it's we're using the device that Steve Jobs is using, right? So you got to imagine he's a little TO that he can't, shoot porn to his Apple TV.
No, he can.
Oh, he has the special build that that allows that.
Yeah.
He's got that special cable.
He
just hardwired.
Oh yeah, so he doesn't need it. Yeah, he doesn't care.
See, we thought he had said freedom from porn. He actually said porn for free.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So,
on the Mobile Me thing, the number one reason I know that people end up with the duplicates usually, and this got me the very first time a long time ago. At one point, I had flipped on. You know, if you go into the device in iTunes and you turn on the local syncing along with the Mobile Me syncing, that's a sure recipe for dupes.
I can't believe that Apple actually lets you do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. Because you shouldn't do both. It's one or the other.
Hmm. Well, it does warn you. I mean, if you read the fine print, but the problem is, you know, as we all know, no one wants to read that junk.
Okay. Right? That's stupid.
Yeah.
Because it's an either or feature. Don't give people the ability to have both active. Even with a warning, it should be a radio button. Are you doing it this way or this way? And that's it.
Yep. Yep. So that's the part that they should just make better.
Okay. Yeah. That fixes it for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe they could just throw that out there in
case people are wondering why it might happen to them.
They could make Mobile Me into something that people care about or understand or know what it is or...
Right. I love Mobile Me.
I love Mobile Me too.
I think if you have two home computers, it'd be great. But for those of us who only have one home computer, there's literally nothing on that list other than an email that I would have a reason to use.
No, see, I do have two computers, but I don't really care about having the Mobile Me stuff on the second computer. All I care about is having all my stuff from my computer synced to my phone wirelessly. So whenever I make a bookmark or have a new contact on either device, it goes back and forth.
Apple just needs to buy Dropbox and make that the new iDisk, and then life will be glorious.
That would be really cool.
Jeff, I know you. We talked about the calendar stuff with MobileMe when we switched over to the new version of MobileMe calendar. Mm-hmm. Did you lose a lot of older calendar events?
No, but I got a message in MobileMe. It brought up a dialogue as it was syncing everything. That it was going to take a long time because I have a surprising number of events.
No, I see. I had that too. I had that dialogue pop up too, but like even stuff from like earlier this year and basically anything that isn't recurring.
Now I have my old stuff, which is good because my calendar is also my record of what I've done. So I can look back.
Right.
And see stuff that I've done months or years ago if I need to for whatever reason.
Yeah, there same is a for setting, me. You know, Michael.
Okay, tell me more.
So go into Mail, Contacts, and Calendars and scroll all the way down to the bottom, and there is a sync setting, and you can tell it how much you want to sync back.
No, I'm not talking about on my phone. I'm talking about on my Mac.
Oh.
Yeah, I lost stuff from like even earlier this year where I need to know what days Macworld was 2 years ago or something like that for some reason.
And you use iCal?
Yeah, it's not there anymore. I guess I have to dig through a backup.
I think there's
or
a setting in there too
where
you can tell it to automatically. It might be under advanced to automatically slough off.
You might be right.
Events
about
that are old.
So yeah, I'll go through there and I'll play with it.
I don't like keeping those, so I actually have mine cleaned out. So like on my phone, I was going to note that I only have it go back a month. So
okay, all right. So the last story of the day, and it is about the white iPhone 4. It's just in there. It's just in there for fun because I don't care anymore because I already have an iPhone. But according to 9to5 Mac snapped a photo of some in-store, a placard in front of the iPhones. So when you go to the display of iPhones at the Apple Store, you see these placards that show all the specs and the pricing and all that stuff. And at the bottom, in the fine print, we're talking about apps and et cetera, it says the white iPhone 4 will be available spring 2011.
Yeah, I went to one of the local Apple stores and took a photo of that myself because I wanted to see just exactly what it really said. And sure enough, it's in there.
Oh, really?
Hold on, I'm bringing up the photo so I can look at it. The white iPhone will be available spring 2011.
Yeah. Huh.
It's right in there. It's like the second sentence in the fine print under the warranty information available on request highlight.
Yeah, I'm guessing that if I hadn't purchased my black iPhone 4, it would probably never come out. And so if it does come out, it's only because I purchased a black one.
Wait, so spring 2011?
Mm-hmm.
Does it say iPhone 4?
Oh.
Yes, it does.
Does it?
That's what I'm wondering because I keep seeing more than 3 months.
Yep, it does.
A month later, guess what? You just bought the old.
Yeah, you're stupid. You know,
I got this wacky feeling that the iPhone 5 is not coming out in summer this year. And I know we just talked about why, you know, all those reasons why Apple does that so consistently. But we hear about a Verizon iPhone in the spring. Then we hear about a white iPhone. There's no way Apple's going to do all this crazy iPhone 4 changes 2-3 months out. I mean, it suggests to me that either the iPhone 5 is coming in the spring, and that's why we hear about these models.
Right.
Or maybe because of 4G slow rollout or something, the iPhone 5 isn't going to come to like, you know, November of next year. And that's why they're doing all these iPhone 4 enhancements.
That might be actually plausible. I mean, that makes sense just from a timing standpoint. Is why would you want to put out a new 4G phone when the carriers aren't ready to really support it?
Right.
And I'm just speculating. I've seen no evidence. You know, I mean, I've heard nothing inside or whatever about an iPhone 5 release date. But it just, I mean, it's too many weird pieces that don't fit right together on the calendar.
Right. Right. Okay, so I think we're ready to go with our iDevice picks. Bill, I didn't warn you ahead of time. Do you have a pick ready, or should we go with the other guys and you can think of something?
I'm sorry, I've got laryngitis. I can't speak.
So you think you'll be able to come up with a pick when we come around after?
So, Bill, make your pick the built-in text message app, because you can say, people that can't talk can still type messages to you.
Nah, that's lame.
Can we do hardware?
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I'll just really quickly throw out two because they're kind of fascinating to me. They're not perfect products, but they're kind of first of their kind. One is a Kensington came out with a iPad battery case, and it's like finally, you know, and it's thicker than you'd want, and it's sort of halfway between a case and a cradle. It's $100 and some bucks. It's not cheap, but it's like finally you can get a form-fitting iPad battery. The other thing that came out is Altec Lansing has a iPad-specific dockable speaker system that's actually got an arm on top that fits the iPad, and you can rotate it. And it's a little overpriced for the audio quality, but it's nice to see these finally showing up. Of course, they'll all be discontinued when the iPad 2 comes out. But it's nice to see these things are finally coming out, because when one does it, of course, then every vendor is going to do it. So, you know, the iPad users are no longer being shut out of the kind of iPhone accessories that iPhone users have been used to.
So the... So which one do you want to pick, one or go with both? You get the Kensington Power Pack, and then I don't know what the other thing is called.
I'm looking at it. I can't read it. Altec Lansing Octave Stage.
Ah, yes.
If I had to pick one, I guess I'd go with a battery because, you know, it's kind of the first, at least with a speaker system, you can do an aux-in with your iPad, any speaker system. But the battery thing's a big deal because up until now, what are you talking about? Plugging in like an external battery brick or something?
Yeah. Okay, so it's $129.99 for the Kensington Power Pack. Is that available now, or are we still waiting on it?
I have one. To be honest, I'd have to look up and see whether it's – a lot of times they're still in pre-order when they send out the review units. But,
right.
I mean, it's real and it exists. So, if it's not orderable today, I'm sure it's pre-orderable.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Kensington Power Pack battery case for the iPad. It's $129.99. And so with that, Jeff, do you have a pick this week?
Sure. I'm changing my mind right now. Okay. My pick this week is now the We Have Communicators mug.
Oh, boom.
Yeah. So if you have been so patiently waiting to get your own We Have Communicators mug, they're available through my Zazzle store. And they have Michael and Adam's beautiful faces, and I'm on there too.
Awesome. Yeah, Zazzle.com/JGamut, right? And you'll see, I think it's at the very top.
Right.
And it's $15.95.
And if there is a different mug style you would prefer, that's okay. You can change out which mug you want.
Dude, you can change everything. It's awesome. You can get different handles. You can get different colors. You can get different styles. If you'd want a commuter mug or a Zazzle, just it rocks.
Can I get one with a built-in USB port?
No.
Well, then what's the point?
Yeah.
What is all this for?
I got the 15 ounce.
You can get a
tall one because I'm a coffee fiend.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Or you can get the frosted glass mug for your beers.
Right.
Yes.
So you can drink beer with us. Now, my mug hasn't shown up yet, so I haven't seen how cool it really looks in real life. But Adam, you said it looked really good.
Yeah, it looks great. Yeah.
Did you
I threw a picture up on Twitter somewhere right when I got it, and yeah, it's been awesome. It's a 15 ounce white ceramic black with a black interior.
Yeah, that looks sharp.
That's sort of the one that looks that Jeff put up there as the featured one. I just got the bigger style.
Yeah, that looks
but
nice.
I think it looks really nice together because the drawing on the front is that great black and white illustration that Jeff did. So
yeah,
matches nicely.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes, and if I remember, I'll also put a link in the unlike the sidebar of wehavecommunicators.com.
So you can drink with us anytime you'd like.
Yeah.
But you have to do it with a dock connector port.
Yeah, make sure you're holding a USB.
Right, because that's what all the pro kids do.
Right, exactly. Okay, so, and Adam, what is your iDevice pick?
You know, I'm going to do the Magic Fiddle.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, have you guys played around with this?
No, tell me more.
So, you know, I saw a review online, and I've tried all the little Smule iOS music instruments. The Ocarina was the first one, and I guess I didn't really try the leaf trombone. Didn't play around with that one too much.
Yeah, that was kind of dumb.
But I have Magic Piano, which is fun and neat and stuff like that. But this one to me is you know, it's never going to be like a real instrument, okay? These aren't real instruments or traditional instruments like you'd think of it. But to me, it kind of feels the most like playing a real instrument. Like, I think you could actually probably learn it as an instrument, whereas the other ones just kind of felt like a little bit gimmicky, a little bit like toys. I guess the Ocarina was pretty close, too. But I never got the Magic Piano because it kind of had this mode that you didn't really feel like you were playing it. It was just sort of like tapping to the lights. It felt a little more toward the garage, or not garage band, rock band side of the music playing spectrum. Whereas this one, I think if you actually practiced and played with it, you probably could get pretty good at playing your iPad as a fiddle.
That's cool.
It's got a really nice tutorial mode with a bunch of built-in songs. I know you can get more songs for it. And it walks you through all the techniques, and it does it in kind of a really humorous kind of way too. So the tutorial has been kind of fun to just plow through. And of course, it's got all the great features like you can play along with people in other parts of the world. So it has that world mode where you can, you know, partner up with somebody over the internet. And it does integrate, I think, with the Magic Piano. I haven't had a chance to play around with how that works. So you could have one person playing Magic Fiddle and one person playing Magic Piano, but basically you hold your iPad up, you know, like very similar to the way you would hold up a violin or a fiddle, and you can play it. So, and I think, how much was it? I don't remember the price, of course, because I always forget to look it up. It is $2.99.
Yep.
Yeah, $2.99. And they have some cool videos online, and there's a guy on YouTube who is actually a music student. I forget at which university, and he got it, and within a few hours was actually rocking out on it with original music. He put together some videos and recorded some multi-track stuff with the Magic Fiddle. So,
oh, awesome.
You can actually play your iPad. And they've got holiday songs going up, some built in, and there's achievements, and there's kind of a game element to it. So I've been having fun with it, I guess, is the main thing, which is why I'm recommending it.
Yeah, awesome. And
it's only $3.
Yeah, $2.99, Magic Fiddle. Go check it out. And my pick is another Kensington product, actually. It's the Soundwave Sound Amplifying Car Mount, which translates to a car mount for your iPhone 4, and it's wonderful. I had the previous one for the 3GS, and my favorite feature about that one and this one is that, yes, it will accept your iPhone 4 naked without a case. However, you can, it's built to accept one with a case as well. So I use the in-case slider, and it fits perfectly in there. No problem at all. So I just you really just kind of pop it in there. You just kind of push it in, and it snaps in, and it holds onto your iPhone very securely. I actually used my iPhone as our only means of navigation to and from Florida using this car mount. And one of the really, really cool features of it is that if you don't use your iPhone, you don't plug it into the stereo in your car, and you're just using it for navigation and stuff like that, maybe just occasional like texting so you can, you know, see the road while you're doing that, ostensibly, it has a little amplifier in it, just a non-powered amplification system. So there's a little gasket at the bottom where the sound from the speaker on the bottom of your iPhone will then travel through some acoustical amplification stuff and come out on the side of the cradle. So you can hear the voice-guided navigation a little better. So it works, obviously, with any navigation application, or you can just, you know, play audio out through there. The speaker hole is also open, so you can actually have a nice little speakerphone conversation with it. It's not great for that, but it gets the job done. I honestly just love it because it's such a great cradle for my phone. I actually plug my phone into the stereo in my car so it gets power and all that stuff, and there's a, you know, there's room for the dot connector at the bottom. Just snap it in there. It's great. It's very secure. So it uses a suction cup with a additional locking deal. I don't know what you'd call that. It locks it pretty well to the windshield. Make sure it's, you know, nice and warm so it can get a good grasp onto the windshield. But, you know, other than that, works great. The arm itself between the cradle and the mount is very nice. It's a firm, flexible arm, so you can really just bend it into any position that you want to. So you can just, you know, whatever car you have. I drove down to Florida in a Navigator, and, you know, I usually drive my Volkswagen, and so it was very easy to change the orientation of the cradle to adapt to that car. So it's great for any car. It's very secure. I enjoy it a lot. It's one of my, I use it almost every day. So Kensington Soundwave, sound amplifying, car mount, blah, blah, blah. Look for Kensington car mount, or just, you know, check out the show notes. It's $39.99, totally worth it. And I don't think it's available right now, to be honest. I think you have to pre-order it still, but I've been using it for like a month and it's great. So check it out. And with that, you can check out all of our iPhone picks as well as the show notes. So all the stuff we talk about during the show at wehavecommunicators.com. You can send your feedback to the email address, which is feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. And you can find Bill Palmer at Beat Week Magazine, beatweek.com, right?
Yeah. The Black Eyed Peas are on the cover of the new issue of Beat Week Magazine. So they talk about their new album, their Super Bowl halftime show. So check it out.
Oh, awesome. You talked to Fergie?
No, Fergie was actually not included on the interview, unfortunately. So I think I'm kind of like working my way up to Fergie. Like, by 2016, they'll let me talk to her. So
who were you talking to? Was it Will I Am?
No, it was Apple the App and Taboo. So, you know.
Okay. Fair enough. You get two artists instead of, you know, Will I Am.
I'll take it, right?
I mean, yeah, it's good.
At least I wasn't talking to the roadie.
Can I mention something about Beat Week? Because a lot of people don't know this, and I've shown it to a couple people, and they're always surprised when they see this. Beat Week, you know, is on digital magazine, distributed as PDF also through the website, right, Bill?
Yeah,
and so you can subscribe in iTunes like a podcast. A lot of people don't know that you can go into iTunes and you can get Beat Week, and when the new issues come out, they will be automatically downloaded just like a podcast to your Mac. Unfortunately, I don't know, Bill, I kind of put in a request to Apple to fix this, but they're like, so close to being able to have it sync automatically with iBooks, but it's just not quite there yet.
I know. So, it's like one step away. You have to kind of manually drag it in.
Yeah, you have to drag it out of iTunes and then back into iTunes to get it in the iBooks section. And then you can sync it over to your iPad and stuff like that, which I've been doing, which is great. But if they could just automate that last mile piece, it would be awesome. But I don't want people, you know, if you have an iPad, BeatWeek is great on the iPad. And with very little effort, you can get it in there. So I just want to
for what it's
out.
Worth, we also, because we don't want anything to be limited, we take all the content in the magazine and push it out individually on the website during the course of the week. So, you know, right. If you can't get into the PDF for one way or another, you know, everything is accessible through the web.
Yep.
Cool. So
either way, you got your choice of how to pick up the content.
I did not know you could do that.
And it's a very cool magazine.
Yep.
Yeah. So if you go to beatweek.com, you can click on it's the subscribe link at the top right. And you can also find Bill on Twitter at twitter.com/BillPalmer.
It's twitter.com/P. Schiller.
You're ghostwriting for Schiller now, and he's writing for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, cool. All right, and Adam Christensen, of course, is at the MacCast, MacCast.com. And yep. Member show, of course, member.MacCast.com.
Yeah, I just did an episode on, you know, I thought it was going to be the most mundane thing, but it's gotten a lot of great feedback, and that was what is in my doc and why.
Oh, yeah. That sounds interesting.
So now people are sharing with me their doc tips and tricks and what apps are kind of the critical, because, you know, that's where your most precious apps usually end up.
Yeah, I bet a lot of people have different methodologies as to how they arrange stuff and what they put down.
Yeah, talked about how I organize it and why I organize it in certain ways. So if you want to hear that content, you know, member.maccast.com, you can sign up and check it out.
Yeah, and also twitter.com/maccast.
Yep.
And, of course, Jeff Gamet is the managing editor at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. And he's also on Twitter, twitter.com/jgamet. And the cafepress.com/jgamet store has a bunch of his apparel and various other things with all of his drawings on there, as well as the Zazzle store, which features the wonderful We Have Communicators mug, zazzle.com/jgamet.
Well, as always, thanks for having me on.
Of course. And thanks for doing the mug. I'm excited to check that out and get one. I'm going to get one.
Yeah, I'm excited for mine to show up. And isn't it just kind of funny? I put the whole thing together, yet I still have to buy it from the store.
Yeah. I was waiting for mine to magically show up. I just assumed that the fairy would, because my face is on there, that somehow it would just appear.
And see, I thought, sorry, this mug is copy protected.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to connect it to iTunes before I can drink coffee out of it for the first time.
That's right.
All right. And my Twitter, of course, is twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And I do the Little Reviews, which is twitter.com/LIL Reviews, which is Lil Reviews. And I talk about lots of stuff like food and other things, stuff I like and stuff I don't like. And it's really small reviews and it's fun. So check that out.
Hey, and thanks for letting me do a guest review.
Yeah. Someone asked me a question about that, but I won't drill down.
I know what the question is because I've been asked several times.
Yeah.
Just how I know.
For the record, I think pumpkin spice nog is okay, but it's just so meh compared to the nog that I just don't even bother.
Pumpkin is my favorite spice girl, too.
All right, and with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod.
A phone. Penis.
I didn't say $5 per occurrence.
Oh. All right.
There's just one deal, $1.5. He's not made of money.
I love people who listen to this. All they're going to hear is Jeff mentioned penis and me saying, well, I'm getting my wallet out. Think about that out of context.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylist, right?
No, it wasn't the porn hall, but there were women in short vinyl skirts, very short vinyl skirts.
I think the case could be made that every hall at CES is a porn hall.
Yeah.
That's why I walk around with my penis in my hand the whole time, just to be ready.
Just to let everyone know that you're ready.
If you use that line on the show, I'll give you $5. I'll give Michael $10 if he lets it go through.
Yeah. I could use
Michael,
$10.
You might make $10 tonight.
I might make, yeah. No. We should have Bill on more often.
No. Yuck, no, 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 no. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Our fingers.